Welcome to The Mindful Dog Parent, the podcast for overwhelmed and anxious dog owners who are doing their best but still feel like they're getting it all wrong. I'm Sian, a trauma-informed coach and ethical dog trainer. I created this podcast because dog parenting isn't always cute reels and perfect walks. Sometimes it's tears after training, guilt in the quiet moments, or just feeling like you're the only one struggling. If you've ever said, I love my dog, but this is really hard, you're in the right place. Each week, I'll bring you calm, compassionate guidance to help you build confidence, regulate your emotions, and reconnect with your dog, even when things feel messy. Because you're not failing, you're just overwhelmed, and you don't have to figure this out on your own. Hello, welcome to The Mindful Dog Parent. I am Sian, and as always, every single episode, I'm really glad that you're here with me today. So today's episode is a practical one, and I want to start by just painting a picture that I think a lot of you is going to recognise. Anyone who listens to the podcast is going to recognise this. So you're out on a walk and things are going all right, and then you see another dog or a cyclist or a person in a high-vis jacket or whatever particular thing that your dog is triggered by. And then the split second after you spot it, something happens. So you feel a jolt, you feel your grip tighten on the lead, your shoulders are going up, you hold your breath, and then you're just waiting for your dog to react. And often they do. And you walk home feeling like the walk was just a complete write-off. But here's what I want to talk about today. That moment between spotting the trigger and your dog reacting. So the window of, and this is so, this like reactivity is so varied and nuanced, but there's usually a window of like 5, maybe 10 seconds that is an empty time. If your dog reacts from a big distance, then that time isn't going to be 5 to 10 seconds. It's going to be shorter than that because the distance is bigger, which means they're going to be triggered more often. But generally, there's a window there of around 5 up to 10 seconds of not empty time. So it's just that gap before the inevitable happens. So it's actually one of the most important moments on the entire walk. And most dog parents have never been shown what to do with that time. So today, I want to talk about what that window actually is, why it matters so much, and exactly what to do with it. Because when it's used well, that window can change what happens next, the trajectory of the scenario, the moment, and the walk. So let's start with what actually happens in those moments before your dog is reacting, because I think once you understand the biology of it, that window of time stops feeling like a helpless countdown and starts feeling like an opportunity. And you're probably going into freeze mode here with your dog as well. So that 5 second window is the time where your dog is kind of maybe fixating on something, and then you're getting more tense and you're in a freeze response. So it's absolutely normal for these things to happen when you haven't got the toolkits available to you with a reactive dog. So when your dog is spotting the trigger, it could be the other dog, a stranger, a bike, whatever that is, their nervous system is going to begin to respond when they spot it. It's not immediately at that full activation, but in a progression, unless, again, caveat, unless their distance is very big and they see things from a distance and they're very triggered very quickly, then that window of time is much shorter and actually it is full activation that's happening there, like there and then. But first there's noticing, then there's the assessment, then if the assessment's concluded that this is a threat, there is that full reactive response. And that progression does take time. It's not a lot of time, but there is a bit of time there. And in my nervous system aware dog parenting framework, that progression is kind of where we start to figure things out, because a dog who's noticing something, a trigger, is very different from a dog who's assessing, who is very different from a dog who's already committed to a reaction. So it's that we're thinking about. That window, that 5 to 10 seconds between you spotting the trigger and your dog reaching that full activation, is the noticing to assessing phase. So your dog's clocked that trigger but hasn't decided yet. I mean, if they're at a distance and they're coming closer, or if they're at a distance and moving a little bit quicker and the dog becomes more animated, those are things that are going to be a little bit more, that's that assessment, like, is this a threat to me or not? If they're going in the other direction, or something slows down or turns off or goes up, you know, up a path or up in a driveway, then it's that is that assessment period. So that's that, like, they've clocked it, but they just haven't decided yet. And in that window, two things are happening simultaneously that are really important to understand. The first is that your dog is gathering information, not just about the trigger, but also about you. It's not that they're looking at you, but they're kind of picking that up about what's happening with you. They're reading your nervous system in real time. So that is your breathing, your posture, your grip on the lead, your energy. They might be fixated on that thing, but if they start feeling that grip tighten and that lead start to tighten, that tension is going to build in their body off the back of that tension. And what they find in you in those moments contributes to the assessment of whether this situation is safe or dangerous, because that tension is going to build tension. It's not a simple thing to just kind of say, well, I'm just not going to be tense, because there's more to it. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. And again, it's not your dog's reacting because of you, because of what your nervous system state is doing. Again, it's not that simple. So the second thing that's happening, out of those two things that are happening simultaneously, is that your own nervous system is also activating. That's what I mentioned, where you spot the trigger and your body is responding physiologically. Your body is responding. It's a really completely natural, automatic threat response. Your system is trying to protect you both, and that's not a flaw. That's not anything that shouldn't be happening. That's your nervous system doing its job. So right now in that window, you've got two nervous systems beginning to activate together. And if nothing interrupts that pattern, the reaction becomes much, much more likely. Not because you've done anything wrong, but because that's how co-regulation works. Both nervous systems are influencing one another constantly. So I always say two nervous systems, one lead, when I talk about everything, because I have to think about the human at the end of the lead as well as the dog at the other end of the lead. But the important part about this is that same co-regulation loop can work in the other direction. Your nervous system can influence theirs towards calm just as easily as towards activation. And that is what this window is for. So before I share that framework, I want to talk about what happens naturally in that window, because again, understanding that biology, which we've done, but also understanding what's happening naturally in that window is actually really empowering. So, and that's what I want to do. I really want to empower you with things and that you can take away. So when your nervous system detects a threat, which is exactly what it's doing when your dog spots a trigger, it moves into that protective state that I mentioned. And from that protective state, your body does a handful of completely natural instinctive things. So like I mentioned, your grip is tightening, your muscles are bracing, your shoulders are going up. You might move more quickly to get past the situation because that's just like, I have to get out of this. You might talk more, filling in like anxious silence with, it's okay, look at me, leave it. So there's actually quite a lot of different training cues coming into it. You might be making noises. If they look like they're about to go, you're kind of like starting to drag them a little bit. You might freeze and wait to see what happens, depending on the situation and depending on what your responses are, because everybody is going to respond slightly differently and every dog has different reactions as well. So every single one of those responses just makes complete sense. Your nervous system is trying to manage a stressful situation in the only way that it knows how in that moment. And there's nothing wrong with any of it. So what's useful to understand is that these responses, the bracing, the urgency, the rapid talking, the held breath, communicate through the lead. And again, I really want to, like I've said this already in the episode, but I really want you to hear, it's not because you're doing something wrong, but it's because your dog is reading you constantly. They feel that grip tighten. They hear the change in your voice, so you might get a bit more anxious, kind of tenseness in your tone, or frustration could come in, and then that's a different tone again. They're going to sense the urgency in your movement, and they use all of that in their all of that information in their assessment of whether that situation is safe. So all of this stuff's happening. So the reason a different approach is worth learning is simply, if we can give our nervous system a different set of options in that moment, a learned response that we can access even when we're under pressure, we get to choose what information we send down that lead. Not because the natural response was wrong, but because we've got something better available. And that's not about blaming yourself for how you've responded before, because I have been the dog mum who's done that. I've said, it's my fault that my dog's doing this. It's absolutely not your fault. And I really want you to hear it. It is not your fault that your dog is reacting this way. They are already feeling that threat. They're already feeling that tenseness and that signal that their body is giving them, their own nervous system's giving them, as well as feeling your own nervous system going into this as well. So it's about building a skill that becomes available when you need it. So here's the framework. Four steps in order, and the order really does matter here. So the first step is to regulate yourself first. So I always want every client that I work with to try and practice doing this. So before you do anything with your dog, do something with yourself. One breath, not a big dramatic breath, just a conscious exhale. So soft shoulders, unclench your jaw, soften the grip on the lead. You don't want to drop the lead, obviously. You want to keep everybody safe. So if you're near a road, you obviously want it to be so your dog's not jumping into the road. But just try to soften that grip. So you could be holding the lead handle. If you're watching on YouTube, I've got like white knuckles from gripping. You could be gripping that handle, but making that lead slacken. So you're holding the lead handle, but you're not putting the tension through that lead by pulling it taut. So that breath and breathing in through your nose, breathing out through your mouth, taking two sharper breaths in, so, and then breathing out and exhaling longer than the inhale. That takes 2 to 3 seconds. And what it does is interrupts your body's automatic threat response before it fully transmits down the lead. You're not trying to feel calm here. You are just trying to create a tiny physical shift that sends a different signal to your dog. That breath, that really quick breath, so if in that window of like 5 to 10 seconds when your dog's potentially fixating, assessing, making the determination, is this a threat or not, that is what you can do. It's one of the most important steps, and also one that feels most counterintuitive, because every instinct's telling you to respond to your dog first, but your dog's reading you constantly, as we know. So the most useful thing you can do for them in that moment is shift your own state even slightly before everything else. So this is the first part of what we do. So if you've got a reactive dog, this isn't going to like say your dog's no longer going to react at all. This is where we start, in that little window of time where, you know, they're at a distance where they're figuring things out, and we can try to change things for ourselves and for our dogs in that moment. So I just want you to know that. But this change in your state, that breath that we're taking, that conscious breath, really makes a difference. I've listened to a podcast recently, so Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, he's great, and he was talking to someone who's an expert in breath work. He's done a lot of research, he's got a lot of evidence that kind of proves that breath work is the foundation for so many things. So it's not just me saying breathe, because I think it's important to breathe. It genuinely is an important step as a starting point to start to change things for yourself in how you respond in situations. So that's the first one. Step two is create space if you can. So if the geography of where you are allows, if there's room to move, cross the road, turn down a side street, increase the distance between you and the trigger, and try to do it calmly, not urgently. So not speeding up and saying, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. Just a quiet, deliberate change of direction. So distance is one of the most powerful tools in reactive dog walking. A dog who's about to react at 10 meters can often stay under threshold at 30 metres. And when I say threshold, I mean they haven't got to the point of reacting, barking, lunging, pulling, jumping in the air, like whatever that reaction looks like, where you can see it, not wanting to take food when you know normally that they would out on a walk when there's nothing around, that kind of stuff. So that's what I mean. When they've hit their threshold, there's not really much else you can do when they have they're in the middle of that reaction. But a dog that reacts at 10 metres can really genuinely often stay under threshold at 30. Creating space is giving your dog's nervous system more time in that assessment phase rather than tipping into a full reaction. So the key word there is calmly. So a relaxed change of direction says, I've noticed something, we're going to go this way instead and everything's fine. That's a very different message from a panicked lurch across the road. Sometimes we have to. There will be a time when your reactive dog comes past somebody's driveway and they're just coming out of their driveway and you just have to get out of that scenario quickly. That happens. But in these scenarios where we have got that window of time, so this is where I'm kind of talking about it. It's so nuanced and so specific. But in that window of time, if it's possible to teach your dog this way or let's go or whatever cue you would say that doesn't get confused with something else that they already know, that means we're moving on and they're learning it in all the different contexts of training, not just when there's a trigger, because it could become a thing they only hear when there's a trigger, therefore there is a trigger I need to be much more aware of, that you've spotted they haven't, they start to look around and say, oh, I'm hearing this way, that means there's something happening. We need them to learn it outside of these scenarios, so this way, and give them nice positive confirmation that they're doing something great and give them a little treat for that is a really, really good tool to use. I'm going to put in the show notes a link to a resource that will help you, just completely free, that will help you teach your dog a really positive this way, let's go cue, so it can get you started. Because I can talk to you about the steps to take on here, but if you haven't got something that you can look at and see and say, okay, that's how that works, it makes it a bit more difficult. So I'll put it in the show notes, something that's going to help you with that. So this is where you start to build that more calm response. You have a strategy in your mind. You've taken that regulatory breath. You've got that strategy in your mind and you're saying, right, okay, we're going to move on now this way. And you do a little U-turn and you can turn in a different direction. And that's what changes things. You have a step that you can take now rather than freezing, panicking, getting more anxious, showing that through the lead. You can see how this can start to help you. And then step three is give your dog something to do. So not a cue that you're giving them barked in a really urgent voice. So not like, leave it, no, stop, saying their name over and over, not any of those things. A calm, quiet cue that gives your dog's brain something to orient towards other than the trigger. So this is management. For some dogs, that's a scattering of treats on the ground. So sniffing activates what's called the parasympathetic nervous system and physically supports a dog in coming back down from activation. So this is, it is a temporary distraction, but the added benefit of a scatter feed, like a find it, with some food that's facing in a different direction, it really is actually a really positive. I teach my clients who I work with one-to-one for reactivity this really cleanly. My dogs know it as well, really well. So it really does help to bring them down from that activation. And for some dogs, it's that, like I say, that gentle this way as you change that direction. For some, it's a quiet name and a piece of high value food. There is definitely more to it and there are more steps to take. So this is trying to help you in the moment when you need it. But what you're doing is offering your dog an alternative, something for their nervous system to focus on that is not the trigger. You're not pretending that the trigger isn't there, because we do want them to start to have that awareness of triggers, but in a controlled way, working through step by step a reactivity plan. You're just offering them another option for what to do in that moment. And I used to do this with Bonnie when her reactivity was at its worst. And it's one of the things that genuinely changed our walks. not because it worked perfectly every time. It didn't work perfectly every time, and it didn't change how she was reacting when she did react, but because it gave both of us something to do in that window. It gave me a strategy and it gave her a focal point, and it started to then make it much easier for us to work through the reactivity steps that I was implementing, because her threshold wasn't being hit and exceeded every single time she spotted a dog. That's how it can start to help you. I've added distance, I've regulated, I've added distance, I've given her something to do, I've got a strategy in my mind of how to do those things, therefore I've started to feel calmer. She's picked that up, she feels calmer, therefore I can start to implement those reactivity steps. So you can really start to see how this is going to start to help you. And I've lived this and I work on these things with my clients, and it absolutely works and helps and has helped. There aren't any dogs that I don't know that don't enjoy sniffing, and if they're not enjoying sniffing on walks, that's a signal that they are activated all of the time when they're out on a walk, if they're just not sniffing. So bear that one in mind as a little aside. And then step four is release the outcome. So once you've done the first three steps, regulated yourself, you've created space, you've given your dog something to do, let go of the outcome. So watching your dog intently to see if it's worked, holding your breath, waiting, this in itself is its own form of tension, and your dog's still going to feel that. So the anxious watching of will they react sends its own signal. You've used that window really well. Now you walk, you breathe, and you let the outcome be whatever it's going to be. Sometimes they'll sail through, sometimes they'll still react, just like Bonnie did. And both of those things are information, and neither of those things is judgment on you. So what I always say is, when, and I've mentioned this in previous episodes, what we do, if we repeatedly do those steps while we're trying to manage that situation with our dog's reactivity, what you can start to spot for progress reports to yourself, and that evidence that I've talked about in a previous episode. I always get the episode numbers wrong when I say it, so I'm not going to mention the episode. I'll put it in the show notes. That evidence is there to say actually progress is being made. And here we're looking at recovery. So actually, if your dog has still reacted and you've done this a number of times, how quick is their recovery versus what it was a month ago? Versus what it was 2 weeks ago? Because that is information, and that's what I say. Both of these things is information. They'll either sail through it, great, that's worked this time, not every time. Sometimes they still react. Actually, how quickly did they recover this time? That's the information that we want to take and move forward with. And this is the honest thing about this framework. You need to be able to use it when you're already activated. And when you spot a trigger and your nervous system is spiking, you just don't have a lot of spare capacity for all four of those steps. So the way to make this work is to practice step one, that regulation breath and the shoulder drop, in low stakes situations. So many times that it starts to become automatic. In the kitchen, at your desk, on easy walks when nothing's happening. Your goal is for your body to begin to reach for that response when it detects tension, before you've even consciously registered the triggers even there. Because if you can reliably access step one in those first 2 to 3 seconds, the rest becomes more possible. So steps 2, 3, and 4 are all going to flow from a slightly more regulated state. And without step one, they just are genuinely much, much harder to reach. So you can practice right now if you like. So take one long inhale through the nose. Let your shoulders drop. Take another little sharp in breath through your nose. Unclench that jaw. And then breathe out through the mouth and make that out breath longer. It's as simple as that. The more you practice it in ordinary moments, the more available it's going to become in the difficult ones. And this is what the podcast that I was listening to, sorry, I wasn't watching that one, in the car, That is what they were talking about. So these breathwork exercises, if you practice them in ordinary moments and start to kind of be more conscious of how you're breathing and what you're doing, it's way, way more possible for it to become habitual. And it's way more possible for you to reach for those things a lot easier when you really need them versus only trying to use them when you need them and you're already activated. That you're not setting yourself up for success here. You're not setting your dog up for success. This is where working on things in these step-by-step approaches really, really helps. So the window before your dog reacts is not dead time. It's not the gap before the inevitable. It is one of the most important 5 to 10 seconds on the entire walk if you've got a reactive dog. And now you've got a framework on what to do with it. Regulate first, create space if you can. And I will say about that step that I haven't already mentioned, if you've got a reactive dog and you're walking down jitty paths or canal toe paths or anything like that, I would avoid those places. You're on a canal toe path, there is literally nowhere else you can go to add enough space. If you know your dog reacts at 30 metres, somebody's coming towards you, if it's a bike, a dog, like whatever it is, then it's going to just be a real struggle. And again, you're setting yourself up for failure there. So avoiding those kinds of places and just being able to go to places where you can add that distance is important. Third step, give your dog something to do and release the outcome. So if this episode's given you something really useful, something you actually try on your next walk, I'd love for you to share the episode. Send it to another dog parent who's struggling on walks. Post it somewhere. It might reach somebody who needs it. The people who most need this podcast, and so often the ones who just don't know it exists yet, are the ones that really do need that help. And you sharing it is how they can find it. So I shall see you next time on The Mindful Dog Parent. Thanks so much for tuning in to The Mindful Dog Parent. If this episode gave you something to think about, or it just made you feel a little less alone, I would love it if you followed the show and shared it with another dog parent who needs it. You'll find all the links and resources mentioned in the show notes at lavendergardenanimalservices.co.uk/podcast. And I would love to stay in touch, so head there if you want to explore more ways to work with me or get support.